Mr. Bates, Reel 7. Now, when you went for the, you know, before you started, the medical person had sort of assessed that there was something wrong with you, you know, or something had happened to you which had caused you to have a mental reaction.
Yes.
Now, what did he think it was?
Well, nerves, I think it was known as it in those days, and anxiety. Oh, I remember now, anxiety neurosis. That's the words I think he used, and that I should go back to Chatham and ask for a pension. But by this time, I couldn't travel. So.
Now, that when had that started?
Well, that has started. I can't say.
But quite soon after the war.
Yes. Quite soon after I got back from Singapore. So I looked for a job immediately, and I found it increasingly difficult. I was working for Stepney. I had to go walk from one side of Stepney to the other. There's no bus service, and I found myself getting very jittery.
What form would that jitters take? I mean, how would you feel?
Well, complete and abject terror and panic. It would be. You see, another thing was I tried to go by tube train, and unfortunately, at Whitechapel Station, the train broke down in the tunnel, and we was there for about an hour and a quarter in the dark again. And I think that didn't help matters. That helped to bring it along much faster than it was happening. But it's abject terror. I can't describe it anywhere else.
And the sweating you mentioned before.
Yeah, profusely sweating and trembling.
Now, when was this defined as agoraphobia, which is what one of the things you've. Or is agoraphobia just a catch-all phrase? I'm not really familiar with this.
I think it was first mentioned when I went to King's. That was some years later. I'd been treated by the borough doctor for some time, and then by my own GP.
And how did he treat you?
I can't remember the name. M&B's was it or something. Some tablet like that, I think it was. I'm not certain.
And did it do any good?
No.
None at all?
No.
And how did you manage to get through your working career? I mean, how?
Well, I was fairly lucky. I worked with a gentleman who was a gentleman and who understood what I was going through. He seemed to have something or the other that told him how I was feeling. And he helped me a great deal. And just by talking more than anything else. And he was a great comic, and he recently died about a month ago. And we kept in touch all these years. He was such a wonderful man. But he kept me going.
Right to your retirement age?
No, I took the examination with Stepney Council, and I passed and became an officer. And of course then we parted company, but we still stayed as friends.
So how long did you work at Stepney for? In various.
From about 47 up to 1950-odd, I think. Yeah, about 1950-odd.
And what then?
Well, no, it must have been earlier than 50. It must have been earlier. It was the late. I got married in 50 and I was working for the. Oh, yeah. No, it must have been about 50, yeah. Sorry, you'd have to excuse
me. It's okay, this is difficult.
Dates are to me.
So what happened when you finished with them? Why did you finish with them? You just couldn't do it anymore?
Well, it was a better job came along with the Greater London Council. Similar job in housing. I applied and I got it. And I started to work for the Greater London Council.
As a housing officer?
Housing officer, yes.
And how did that go?
Well, I managed to get to County Hall, and they decided to put me in an office at Bow, Stepney. And I found the journey so traumatic that in the end I opened up and told them what was wrong with me. And they decided to give me a job in Sumner Road, which is about 100 yards up there. And they put me in charge of an office up there. So they were very, very good and understanding. The medical officer who saw me, once again, was saying I should go for a pension and all the rest of it. I preferred to keep working, which I did until 1978.
Which would be about your retirement, normal retirement age, would it?
No, I was born in 26.
Oh, yes, yeah, sorry, yeah, sorry. Were you still having the problem getting to work, even though it was close?
Yes. Oh, yes. I mean, even when my mother and father were dying, they lived just the other side of Tailbridge, and I couldn't get to them. If my daughter got stuck once when she was about 12 years of age, and she got stuck with some friends at Margate, and I couldn't do anything about it. So I hired a London taxi to go all the way down there and pick her up and push him back.
Now, what about you? You retired early retirement then. How did that come about?
I had a very, very bad time. I attended King's.
What did King's say? What?
This, a bit earlier, King's treated me for anxiety and neurosis, and they gave me Valium because Valium was the in thing in them days, which didn't seem to do any good whatsoever. My doctor wanted me to go for retirement, but then I went sick and I couldn't go to work any longer. They kept my job open for 18 months, and then they decided that time, the GLC was being swallowed up by the local councils. And as I'd been off sick for 18 months, I decided that was enough and pensioned me off.
Now, when did you decide to claim your pension from the Navy?
Must have been about 93, I think, something like that.
You were still having the problem, still restricted to your home.
Yes.
Had they told you then it was agoraphobia, and you've got mixed in claustrophobia as well, which
yes.
is a nasty combination, I would imagine.
Well, it is.
When did they tell you, when did they actually use those words? They're the sort of modern terms, aren't they?
Well, I think it was Dr. Mackay, it was a Scottish doctor, but I'm not sure whether he worked for the GLC or Southwark. I think it was the GLC doctor.
And did they explain to you what was happening to you? Because you must have been puzzled as to what was happening.
Well, I'd read up Claire Weeks. Had written a book. She was an Australian psychiatrist, reckoned to be one of the best in the world. And a friend of mine bought me the book, and I read it. So I had a good idea what was happening, but not how to cure it. So, This got worse and worse and worse until, I mean, I haven't been on a bus for about 35 years. I did get my license for a car, but I could only drive from here to the top of the road and back again. I couldn't go any further than that, but at least it got me out. I gave my license up when I decided with these panic attacks that I might be a danger, so I could. And even if it wasn't my fault, I would blame myself anyway.
And the claustrophobia, how does that affect? The agoraphobia is going outside, but
yeah.
Claustrophobia...
Well, I found that when I was in the car, if I got in a traffic jam, or if I got held up for any length of time, I would start to panic and sweat. If I went into a shop, I can't go in. There's only three shops I can go in. It's Neon's around the corner because he's ex-psychiatric nurse. He knows me, and another two shops further on who have known me for about 40 years. So and unfortunately, because my doctor don't do house calls now, unless you really push them. So, and I'm too proud to do that. I don't go. I don't get there very often.
And do they have any more modern treatments other than Valium, which is?
Well, I've got very high blood pressure at the moment, so I'm on blood pressure pills and Valium still.
And what about the pension? This was definitely related to the war, which is a good old, isn't it? Mm. What about when you applied for a pension? That was in 1990.
Well, I didn't. In fact, what I'd done, I saw an advert in the local paper about the British Legion, and I wrote to them and said, could I become a non-attending member? Because I thought that if you joined the British Legion, then you had to attend the meetings and so on and so forth. And I explained the reason why, that since the end of the war I'd been claustrophobic and agoraphobic. And the next thing I knew, I received a letter from the man, from a doctor, from the War Pensions Office. And within about a month after that, they awarded me, I think it was a 60% pension. And then it went up to 70. Now they want me to go for more, but I've refused.
Why have you refused? You've always been quite proud about this, haven't you? But
well, I mean, I volunteered to go. Nobody forced me to go. I volunteered to go. And anyway, I mean, the guys that got killed, they got nothing. I mean, I'm sitting back with a pension that's coming in that's about £200 a week for doing nothing. And it seems wrong. It seems, you know, that I should be able to earn a living the same as the next man. And this is how I felt all the way through. And it wasn't until I heard about so many people taking money from the state, and you know, that they weren't entitled to it. And then also I was worried about what was going to happen to my wife if the income wasn't enough. I mean, this place, as you can see, is mine, but it needs so much work done on it that I succumbed and went for the pension. And they sent a doctor down to see me at home. It's a domiciliary visit. And next thing I knew, they'd offer me a 60% pension. Then it went to 70. Then they came down again and wanted me to go for the higher one. But I said, no.
You've got enough now.
I think I've got enough, yeah.
And now, you're a member of the Captain's Class Association, and I think you're actually involved with the Goodall veterans, because several of them speak of you.
I write to them. And I phone them, more phoning than writing now.
Is there an actual Goodall's
no.
survivors?
No.
But you still like to keep in contact?
Well, as much as possible, yes. Most of them, as I say, are, like myself, aged and decrepit. We tend to forget phone calls, but we do get in touch with each other at least half a dozen times a year.
And the Captain's Class Association, you're on their membership?
No. I belong to the North Russia Club and the Russian Convoy Club. But, no, they're not the Captain's Class. I wouldn't be able to attend any of the meetings or any of the reunions. I can't get to the Green comfortably without trying to drive Brighton and places like that. I was going to join in case they issued a magazine once a month so I could keep up with what's happening, but they didn't do that, so I didn't join. But the North Russia Club, they do issue a magazine. Another thing is I kept in touch with the boys from the Honeysuckle that picked us up, and in fact the first lieutenant of the submarine that sunk us, I keep in touch with him too.
That seems a strange thing to do, in some people's eyes.
Well, he wrote to me, and it was a delightful letter that he wrote, and told me about most of the crew and so on and so forth. How a lot of them had studied medicine and now when they were prisoners of war, and are now doctors. And, it just sort of went into, he asked me how I was and all the rest of it. I answered, and it went on from there. Yeah.
And this was the captain of the submarine? The
first lieutenant, yes.
Yeah. First lieutenant. And that was you?
U-968. He was first lieutenant. His name is Bilk. And the captain, his name is Westphalen. He hasn't written to me, but he's invited me over to Germany for a week, all expenses paid. I had to write and tell him that I couldn't manage to get on the bus.
Now, you seem remarkably unbit, considering that you've, it one way or another, had an extra 40, 50, 60 years of suffering caused by the disability that was caused by the event. You don't seem very bitter against the Germans.
No, I don't really know why, except I admired them for what they did. I mean, to be in a U-boat must be absolute hell. It never was that personal. It was a feeling as if, well, you know, they're doing the same thing as I'm doing at the moment. I volunteered to go, and they volunteered to go, or they were forced to go. And I think not only that, but my cousin met a German prisoner of war and got speaking to him. He could speak English. I didn't feel any hate against the Nazis. Yes, that's a different thing, but not Germans as such.
Thank you very much.